G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out. Good morning, Whitey.
Morning, Harf. It is this weekend that we've been talking about for such a long time. It has finally come. Preliminary final weekend, obviously, in the AFL. But as you said, so many other sports are all sort of having a massive weekend. So I'm not sure whether you really leave the couch for 2.5 days, to be perfectly honest. No reason to.
Well, it's important to get up and just do something. Just move around a little bit. Maybe just do some laps of the couch every now and then, just to stay mobile, stay active. Can you do that for me?
No. Does it? Before we let in Rammer into the conversation, do you think it feels normal at all that we've got to a situation where the four best teams, they finished in the top four positions on the ladder at the end of the home and away season? Do you feel like it's a normal weekend at all, or definitely not?
Definitely not. No, well, I'm looking forward to the four best teams taking each other on. Don't worry about that. Not only in the AFL, but the NRL as well. But no, it's a long way from being normal, but it's very exciting. Don't get me wrong. It's very exciting. I'm really looking forward to it, which is going to be good fun. So we'll get our teeth into that. Adam Ramanauskas is that gentleman you referenced before, who is a Bombers Premiership player. These days, manager to the Stars. He's doing great things across the planet. And we love him on a Monday and a Friday on The Breakfast Club. And he's back with us today. Hello, Rama.
Yes, good morning. Oh, I agree with Whitey there. I don't think there is much of a need at all to leave the couch this weekend. Maybe just to get a little bit of food and a couple of drinks. But other than that, I think we can just lock in. We just lock into the couch for two good solid days.
Rama, you're not helping.
Well, sometimes I've got to agree with my man. You know, we do sort of think on the same wavelength, but with a little bit, I'd sort of like to move a little bit more than Whitey and, you know, maybe get up and sort of do a couple of laps of the lounge room. But where do we start? We start with the prelim finals this week, weekend. Then we've got the NRL prelim finals. Then we've got the racing. Then we've got the golf. Then we've got some baseball, if you like your American sports, the NFL. Then we go to the netball. It just continues to flow this weekend.
You're making a good point. I'm coming around to your way of thinking, you two. There may be just 48 hours on the couch. This isn't going to go down well at the home. It's not going to go down well. There's going to be some grief. And I'm going to be copying that grief.
There's not as much to do on Sunday, though. Oh, no, it's Bathurst. Yeah, no.
Bathurst. One of the great days of the calendar.
And
well, it depends. It depends.
No.
Hang on.
What do you mean depends?
Is the weather still a little bit tricky on Sunday in Bathurst?
Yes,
because
yes.
If it is,
they're worried about
that's,
it, actually.
That's going to be a lot of fun to watch that, if it's a little bit slippery.
They're actually worried about it. I was reading an article about that last night, which was interesting. They are concerned that the winds and the rains are going to cause absolute havoc at Mount Panorama on Sunday. So it's going to be fascinating viewing, because it's always thrilling, the mountain, but when there's a little bit of rain and wind around, it makes it all the more difficult. Scotty McLaughlin is obviously sewn up the championship. He spoke about the latest Bathurst conditions on balls and bumpers. I was having a bit of a look at that this morning. It's now available, balls and bumpers, by the way, the latest edition with Jack and Scotty.
Do you think that there'll be a lot of safety car action on Sunday?
Every chance there'll be plenty of safety car action. Every chance. And off the SMS, don't forget Dan's Presser on Sunday too, which hopefully is before the netball,
yes.
And they don't cut off the netball to go to Dan's Presser like they did last time.
On Sunday, I hope Dan just gets to the point, mate. Just either just give us a little bit of good news or just give us the bad news. Don't just work your way into it for an hour. Just all at once, bang, straight in the face.
Get on the beers. Well, wouldn't that be nice, Dan? Oh. Wouldn't that be nice?
I advise everybody, don't get too excited about Sunday.
No.
Just temper your enthusiasm.
Don't get too excited about Sunday. Even if all the good things that are meant to happen on Sunday, there's not very many good things. It's not really going to change your world on Sunday.
Oh, it's a way to suck the jam out of the Friday donut, isn't it? Really?
Well, it is.
We're having a great morning. Go on.
I think, but there are people that I think of the belief that even if Dan was able to unveil all the things that he planned to on Sunday, that it was going to just everyone go back to normal. That's still miles away. Sorry.
I woke up and had a good morning. Good morning.
I was really happy this morning.
Yeah. You were up and about, Rami. You said it good. And now all of a sudden, just a little bit deflated. And probably fair enough. You know who'll sort this out for us? One man who'll cheer us up is Juppy from Bendigo. He's given us a call on the open line, 1300 652 927. He'll cheer us up. I know he will. He does this sort of stuff. Juppy, good morning.
Morning, Half. Morning, Whitey. Morning, Rama.
What do you got for us, Juppy? Cheer us up. Whitey just ruined the whole day.
Well, I'm going to continue on Whitey's theme, because on a bit of a sad note, on Wednesday we lost the greatest footballer never to play league football in Ron Best, who was a legend up here in Bendigo.
Yes.
Bestie will take a few records with him, I think. He debuted for Sandhurst at age 18 and kicked 14 goals, 9 on debut.
On debut?
On debut. At 23, he captained, coached Sandhurst to a premiership. I don't think that'll ever happen again.
And no, probably not.
He kicked 10 goals or more in 48 games in a row.
You know what? Now, Robbo's done a great piece on him today in the Herald Sun. Mark Robinson, the chief footy writer of the Herald Sun, now he's a Bendigo boy, so he was fully aware of Ronnie's accolades and his feats in local footy, the Bendigo Football Netball League. It's a good point you raised, Juppy. Somebody mentioned this off the SMS yesterday late, and I caught it late, but I didn't have enough information, so I didn't want to go too much on it. But you're right, I've got some more details on Ronnie Best, and Robbo's got a great tribute to him today in the Herald Sun. 270 games, 1,624 goals, if you don't mind, for Ronnie throughout his time at Golden Square, Sandhurst and Northern United. BFL captain 5 times. BFL is 18 interleague games, captain 10, coach 8. 3 premierships, youngest ever premiership coach, as Juppy said, 23 years of age. Leading goal kicker on 10 occasions. Just going through some of the numbers. 137, 107, 108, 135, 145, 108, 124, 137, 145, 124. Most goals in a game is 16. Most goals in a season, 161 in 1980. Hall of Fame member, Bendigo Footy Netball League, life member, of course. And they've named the Senior Goal Kicking Award the Ron Best Medal. Not unsurprising, Juppy, with those sort of numbers and that sort of resume. The Coleman of the Bush, they might say.
There's two other little things to add to that, Half. He was in the Carlton zone and they tried desperately to get him to play for Carlton. But he went down and played one practice match for Geelong. He kicked 9 goals in the practice match but decided he didn't want to play league footy. And then right at the end of his career, him and his great mate and former brother-in-law, Bluey Southam, went out to Port and Bessie did his knee at the start of the year, basically came back on one leg for the finals and kicked 9 goals in the grand final.
Yeah, that's a pretty good record. And you're right, talking about Carlton, they were the days when local football stars were local football stars and they could have quite possibly, a lot of these ones in the bush anyway, could have quite possibly, had they been happy to move and do the city thing, had a huge impact on the VFL as it was back then, boys. So, yeah, good on you, Juppy. Good on you. It was very sad for a lot of people yesterday. I spoke to a lot of people about Ronnie Best yesterday, funnily enough. And he was very, very highly thought of, let alone for his footy, but for the way he engaged with the community, of course, through all those years as well, which is a cool thing in local footy. Well done, Juppy. Well, thank you for that.
He became a politician once he finished playing football. Can you remember Stephen Oliver was another one that was Carlton tried desperately to get to play from that same sort of area. I think he was from Castlemaine, maybe, but certainly from that Bendigo area. He came down for a short time, but ended up going back. He just didn't enjoy it. But he was going to be a superstar.
Parker couldn't get him to stay,
which is a bit flat about.
He was very flat about that.
There are so many stories around that time, where, you know, great bush footballers, great local footballers, they just stayed where they were. They were happy up there. They had a job, or apprenticeship, or getting married, and the like. And just it wasn't for them. Now, you know, people would give their right arm to play AFL football now, but back then it wasn't necessarily the be all and end all of your life.
Well,
Well, there's a lot of situations of players going right back now, but players that would leave the VFL at 23, 24 and go and, say, coach up in the Ovens and Murray or something like that, because there wasn't a lot of money necessarily in being a VFL footballer. You could actually do better in life by actually going and playing in the country.
Well, that's what Robbo's article highlights that today too. There was more money playing in the bush than there was playing in the VFL back then. So why would you go and play in the VFL if you're dominating local footy and that's where you live and you're happy and you've got your life there in the bush? Stay in the bush and do your thing like Ronnie Best. And Paul in the city is going to add to the story today with us. Good morning, Paul.
G'day, fellas. I coached Ron's young brother in the under-12s at West Heidelberg YCW. Ron played with West Heidelberg YCW, and so did Peter McKenna.
He did.
We can kick goals in West Heidelberg, mate.
Gee, what was the game plan? Very straightforward game plan, I reckon. Route 1 sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. West Heidelberg had some amazing footballers in those days. A fellow named Jack Clancy went up to Corowa and did well up there, coaching Corowa. And, a very interesting time.
How old was Peter McKenna when he was there?
Him and Ron are roughly the same age. Peter might be a little bit older. But Peter left when he was in under-19s.
Yeah, okay. That's not a bad forward. I imagine rocking up to that game as a defender. You got Ronnie Best and Peter McKenna sitting in the forward 50 just saying, get out of my way, boys. Good luck. Good on you, Paul. Thank you for that. And I'm sure there's plenty of bush footy stars from yesteryear who would have been huge names in the state leagues and the National League. Not so much the National League, didn't exist, but the state leagues back in the old days as well. And Ronnie, pardon the pun, was clearly one of the best. There'd be a lot of people very sad about his passing in footy in the last little while.
And I know Whitey is always been passionate about this, but this is the challenge for Football Victoria or AFL Victoria, whatever you want to call it these days, is how to get these local competitions back to the strength that they once were. And you know, they've been declining now for so many years, just a number of years. And whether that's through participation, whether that's through guys just not wanting to play anymore, or just the standard dropping, you know, it's you're seeing clubs with great history just completely fall off the map because they can't afford to field teams anymore. And it's going to be interesting, I think, the next 5 years, because I know within the AFL at the moment they're putting plans together, obviously, to you know, what does the future of football in Victoria look like?
Well, I'm very keen for that blueprint to see what that is, actually.
Yeah.
At all levels, second tier stuff, under 18 stuff, NAB League stuff, Rema, which we've talked about a little bit, and then the local football component, what does it look like? My understanding is that post grand final, it won't be long before we find out a bit more about that.
Well, the challenge is that there were challenges for a number of clubs right throughout the course of Victoria before COVID. Now we have COVID. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens to those clubs that were struggling. It's a concerning time. There's no question about that. It was interesting, even last night I was looking through an email around the COVID safe plan for local cricket to come back. Really interesting. The measures that are required just for local cricket clubs to be able to get back and play. It's sort of like mid to late November that they're looking at starting, and that's from, you know, a variety of different levels of local cricket. But, they're certainly taking it very seriously. If you want to get back and play cricket, the things that you need to do in regards to distancing and disinfecting the ball and washing your hands and not sitting next to people even in the change rooms, and you know, if you're waiting to bat, wearing a mask and all these sorts of things, it's going to be a very interesting time in local cricket. I'm not sure how they're going to be able to quite police it all, but they're putting those measures in place.
Well, it won't affect me, Whitey, because I'll be at the crease. So I won't need to worry about sitting there social distancing with masks and all. I'll be at the crease.
I must confess, I almost rang you last night to say that I'm going to be a real bonus for the COVID people, because I'll be spreading the field. There will be won't be too many people that will be staying near each other in the field.
What does that
but
mean?
I'm out there batting.
just thinking about that.
Field will be spread.
What does that mean for the slips, Corden? I mean, is that such
no
a
slip anymore?
Well, I mean, it's a really good question. I mean, they're saying that even when you're in the field, you've got to be a metre and a half away from each other.
We're celebrating wickets? Are we not high-fiving? We're not coming together and...
No, definitely not. Definitely
patting on
not.
The bum and that sort of stuff?
No, definitely not. You're not allowed you're not allowed to sort of conglomerate or whatever, you know, to
congregate.
Get together, congregate. You're not allowed to have afternoon tea, which is a major impact. It's a real shame.
No.
What do you mean there's
that's
no afternoon tea?
For you, Whitey.
No,
it's
a major issue. Yeah, it's a major issue. But I think you got almost like a primary school situation or a school situation where you've got to take your packed lunch to the game.
Whitey, will you be one of those renegades, Whitey, that has you'll take the car and then just the boot will open and all this food will just appear like on platters and trays and
now we're talking.
You'll stand around it by yourself?
Well, I mean, I think the only thing really I can do is just go drive up to KFC in the tea break and just get yourself some drive-through.
Get yourself a bucket.
Imagine driving into the drive-through KFC with the pads on. 40 not out. Just get a chicken burger and get some chips.
Just a zinger combo, thanks.
Don't forget about the potato
on.
And gravy, please.
Can you just put it in the front set? I got my gloves on. Can't get it through the window.
Why are you wearing a helmet, sir? Something important right now. Can I just have my food, please? Very humorous. Very humorous. Is the disinfecting of the ball going to artificially
make it swing?
Make it swing? Yeah, it's going to be some deviation, some natural deviation, so to speak, for a disinfected
sure.
ball.
We're talking about that. During the week, during the award-winning Sheffield Shield coverage,
swung. Stalking Mitch Webson's mum.
Yes, that was very interesting, wasn't it?
The ball was actually swinging quite a lot. And when I say quite a lot, maybe more than what it would normally. And they weren't allowed to put any sort of saliva on the ball or whatever else, but they were really trying to buff it on the pants, you know, to get it going. And it did, you know, even 65 overs in, the ball was still, you know, swinging fairly well. So, I don't know, I'm not really too sure. But again, at local cricket, I'm not sure how they're going to be able to quite police all these rules. But maybe it's just about having a plan, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Would it really be that hard for people to drive around to police these? Like, if they've got COVID officers or whatever, as they say... The cricket grounds are pretty obvious places.
Each club has to have a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
COVID compliance officer, the
more,
CCO.
That's right. But if he's playing in the thirds, how's he going to know what's going on at the first?
That's a good question.
He's going to have like question. A headset on while he's fielding in the galley. We've got a problem at ground two. He's got to get across.
That's a very good question. And normally that COVID officer would be sort of outside the first 11, perhaps. Normally that person's the real sort of stalwart club person, the CCO.
Yes.
Who perhaps says their best is beyond them or never been any good, but they love playing cricket at the club. That's a good point, Wally. That could be, a deep fine leg in the thirds, which is about 45 minutes away from the other ground. And who knows what the hell's happening in the other venues. Good point. Good point. John's on the road. We'll just change your tack a little bit. John, good morning.
Morning, fella. Hang on.
Oh, you're under control there, Johnny. You're right. Everything okay?
Yeah, just a couple of points. This is one for Rammer, and then I'm going to talk about Razor. Ben Brown. Reckon we should go after him, mate, the Bombers. We need someone to kick goals.
Yeah, Rammer. What is going on with Big Ben?
Up, mate. You're an Essendon boy.
Good point, Johnny. Good point.
The interesting Ben is building nicely, so... things are progressing and hopefully things continue that way.
But are the Bombers one of those teams, Ramos? That's what John wants to know. Are the Bombers playing ball?
I can't disclose that type of information
on
this platform.
Send me a text and
I'll send you a text. I might tweet it out.
Just send it to me and I'll disclose it. Then you're not doing it. It's different. It's okay.
Okay, easy, done.
He's giving us nothing, Johnny, but he'd be handy, no doubt.
And Razor Ray, look, I think he got dropped because he can't ball the ball up, and it's so good enough. I don't want to hear him. So it'd be great watching the finals without listening to him. So I'm happy.
I might be in a very small camp here. I think Ray's a very good umpire too.
I just think don't allow him to bounce the ball in the middle of the ground. Yeah. Obviously, he's having trouble with that, but I think he's still a very good umpire. Now, some people don't like the talk, but as an ex-player, I say this to a lot of people. The two best umpires that were around when I was playing were Darren Goldspink and Matty James, because they were happy to have a chat and to explain things to you.
Yep. Darren Goldspink favoured you in a prelim, which we don't want to talk about today, of course, but that's why you liked him, because he basically gave you five goals inside forward 50 in the first quarter. Don't want to talk about it.
I really hope that Ray Chamberlain didn't lose his spot in a preliminary final because of the bounce, because you need your best decision makers umpiring preliminary finals. It does seem, and again, it's really difficult, because I think a lot of people's views on Ray Chamberlain have been skewed because of the mic, the umpire mic.
Yep.
And I think there does, and again, this is just a perception, but it does feel that he plays up to that microphone, particularly in big games. It does feel that he has a much bigger impact on the game, the bigger the game is. And I think he just gets so fired up. It feels that way. Now, I don't
necessarily have issues with it.
Yeah.
But there's having a personality, and there's also treating the players like children out on the ground, and he's like the primary school teacher. So I think there is an element of that with how he goes about it. I don't have an issue as such with the decisions that he gives. It just feels like he's dominating the game. Now, maybe that's just a question of putting his microphone down and not giving him that platform potentially and just letting him umpire. I'm not sure. But that's the feeling. I don't necessarily have an issue with the decisions he gives. But this idea with... can I just talk about this very briefly? This idea about the bounce, it's got to go because it's not predictable and all this sort of thing. That's the whole intention of the bounce. So it actually isn't predictable. And we have a situation where they go, oh, I've got to throw it up so it's predictable. That's what the coaches want, so they can have set plays and they can do all this sort of stuff and they can, control another part of the game. The whole idea of the bounce is so it is unpredictable. That's why the ball is the way it is, so it is unpredictable. That's what the bounce is supposed to create. It's supposed to create uncertainty in a stoppage situation.
Yeah, that's true, but the bounce was never as poor as it's been in terms of its accuracy in recent years. Like, back in the old days, they'd be bouncing the ball midwinter, 35 metres in the air, straight up.
Yeah, but that was a cricket pitch in the middle.
No, but this was around the ground, Rammer, back in the old days when they just bounced it for every stoppage. Now, they didn't do it 1,000 times a game like they do these days.
They had the disc at a couple of the grounds where, or one Sean Wren obviously.
Don't bring that up with Rennie.
That's a very
yeah. But infamous, you understand what I'm saying about that whole thing? They want it thrown up so they can control a stoppage and have a set play. Well, that's not what the intention of the bounce is.
They might be changing
the intention of the bounce. That's the thing. Like, they've changed a lot of intent in the game, and that seemingly will be the next on the agenda to neutralise that the disparity between good and bad and the opportunity for one team versus another. They're taking away that vulnerability of the bounce, so to speak.
So with the balls in general playing, the balls bouncing around, should we go to a round ball so it's predictable as well?
Oh, that's another step, isn't it? Now, you're being silly now. You're being silly.
Well, I agree with Whitey here. The ball is an oval shape for the reason that there is unpredictability attached to it. Now, if the bounce goes one way or the other, so be it. It generally evens itself out throughout a contest.
Generally does. Swings and roundabouts, but the fans only remember the bad ones, Rami, you know that.
Oh, that's
we always only remember the bad things that happen to us.
A good rover like you, Half, could rove to anything.
That's right. Still can. We're going to get a game these days. I was thinking about that yesterday. Kicking the ball beautifully last night. No. Last night, laces out. I was kicking them last night. Lasers.
Your problem would be, right, it'll be D half it out due to chafe because your thighs are that big.
Oh, no, I'd go the full body lycra suit these days. I'd be wearing full body lycra. You actually couldn't choke me. You have to, that friction, like in Incredibles. Have you seen that suit, the suits they make in Incredibles, the cartoon, movie? That's what they need to use for me, just to stop the chafe.
Or just be sponsored by Vaseline.
I'd get you to do that deal for me, and we'd have a lot of fun with that deal. The world of golf. Big announcement this morning that we need to get our teeth into. Nick Dasty, the PGA's Tournament Director of Australasia, has been good enough to join us on a big morning in the world of golf in Australia. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, Daniel. How are you? Adam?
I'm well,
Adam.
Thank you. Great to have you with us. Now, what's happened in the world of golf? What announcements are we making today?
Yeah, as you alluded to, not a great announcement. We've got to a position where we've had to make a call on both the 2020 Australian PGA Championship and the 2020 Australian Men's Open Championships that were both due to be staged in late November and early December originally, and then were both pushed back to the first quarter of next year, and we're looking at February dates. But we've got to a point now where we've unfortunately had to officially cancel both of those 2020 editions of the event. And doesn't sit on our tour, obviously, but the Australian Women's Open of 2021, which was due to be held in February, has also been cancelled at the same time. So it's a tough day for our sport.
Yeah, that is horrible news for the sport, absolutely. So the PGA Championship, the Australian Open, the Men's and the Women's Australian Open have all been cancelled. And you said then, Nick, that you tried to find a window in the new year and sort of roll them, almost have two in the 1 year, but effectively push this one back. How close were you to making that happen, or is the uncertainty just too much of a risk that it wasn't really feasible at any stage?
Yeah, look, I think, certainly up until very recently, we felt like we were a good chance of being able to do it, but the uncertainty, as you said there, is too great a risk. Each of these events rely heavily on the international tours as well, with the Australian PGA Championship being co-sanctioned with the European Tour, the Australian Women's Open being co-sanctioned with the LPGA Tour, and also the Australian Men's Open has significant international players come and play. So the uncertainty still around the quarantine and, a lot of the players that were coming to play would have been coming from all over different parts of the world. We looked at many different scenarios, including, playing in a bubble, the ability to operate a bubble across those 2 weeks would have meant jumping from Melbourne to Brisbane on the men's side as well. So there's different scenarios there with the two different states and different restrictions. And it also meant that if we were going to play in the bubble, that there was no spectators going to be allowed. We couldn't do both. We couldn't do the bubble and have spectators, or if we didn't have the international players, we would have then been able to have spectators. But obviously the events would have been severely compromised.
Yeah, it's a real shame, Nick, but it's sort of in a way inevitable. I'm interested in coming up with that decision. How much of that do you get the players involved in that sort of thing, particularly the ones that are based overseas? And then also just the impact it's going to have on a lot of golfers that are based even in Australia, that these sort of events are potentially their livelihood, their ability to not only earn some serious money, but also to get themselves on to some of the world tours moving forward.
Yeah, look, we did certainly talk to a number of the players that are based overseas or playing on various tours around the world and would have had to have been travelling back, because we certainly wanted to get an understanding of what their willingness was from a quarantine point of view as well. And a lot of it depended on the individual circumstances and where they would have been in the weeks prior. We're also extremely mindful of our players that are based here at home. And as you mentioned, I mean, these are our biggest events, our flagship events, and are their real opportunity to make good money, and their real opportunity to graduate onto to other tours around the world. So it really is a blow to them. It's going to be a real gap year now, where it's hard for anyone that isn't on those current tours now to make that advance. We will still have a number of domestic tournaments throughout the first quarter of 2020-21. And there are some playing opportunities there for the players, but certainly not at the same level as the Australian Open and the Australian PGA Championship.
So I want to ask you about that because there has been an idea around having an event down in Rosebud, some other domestic type tournaments to give those guys an opportunity just to have a tournament of sorts, I guess. It's almost like a new series of events. Can you explain a little bit about what you're hoping to do in that space?
Yeah, so we've just recently announced two new tournaments that are called the Players Series. The first of those is the Players Series Victoria, which is going to be hosted by Jeff Ogilvy and down at Rosebud, as you said there. And the second one of those is the Players Series Sydney, which will be hosted by Brayson Astor and held at Bonnie Doon Golf Club. So both those events are extremely exciting. They're men and women competing in the same field for the same prize money, with juniors actually also joining the events on the weekend. So once the cut's made on the weekend, we'll have two pros in each group along with a junior playing in their own sort of 36-hole event, playing alongside the professionals. So look, they're going to be fantastic for player development. They're going to be fantastic for our elite amateurs and juniors coming through as well to learn off the professionals and be competing alongside the professionals. They're a great chance for our young pros, but yeah, they're not the Australian Open and they're not the Australian PGA, but they're fantastic playing opportunities, and we really, really hope to be able to run those events in the first quarter. We've still got some local quarantine issues or interstate border issues, obviously, as well to work through, but we're extremely hopeful that come the new year that we will be able to travel a little bit more freely within the states of Australia.
On a great day of racing across the nation, we've got 10 race card. The first leg of the quaddy is race number 7. Let's get into it. The Caulfield Sprint Group 2 activity over the 1,000 metres, $300,000 up for grabs. 8 going around, Dino. And Alpha Oro, who I think Mr. Run last week, Alpha Oro, for Matt Laurie, is even money favourite at the tab.
Yeah, he's got in very short, Daniel, but look, he's an exciting horse. I think the likelihood of rain and quite a bit of it, that's what we've got to speculate on a bit as well, is really in his favour. He's won on all conditions, but he's very comfortable on the wet ground. And he's just been going so well, and he drops 6.5 kilos for that win last start. Admittedly, he's going up in grade, but he looks ready for the challenge. And I think this was a better option than last week in that he's in a handicap rather than wait for age. So he's very well placed. Interesting runner here is Graf, first run for Danny O'Brien. This horse hasn't won for a long time, but he's run in a lot of races that are, you know, upper level. He's run fourth in a Lightning, fourth in a Newmarket. He's had two jump outs for the O'Brien stable. Gee, he's going well. He's got to go in. 7 Ghana was very good first up at Caulfield, and then in a small field in Adelaide just got a really messy run. I think from barrier 1 gets a really good run. And Fabergino, who likewise had a pretty messy run in the Moyer Stakes when she missed the start, I like the wide draw for her, and she could certainly improve. But yeah, if we get a lot of rain between now and tomorrow, you'd probably sub a few of those around, because Jungle Edge would probably go in. He does need probably the heavy ground to win on in this sort of field with 60 kilos.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a pretty good summary, I reckon, of the first leg of the quaddy, the Caulfield Sprint. We've got Steffi Graf going around Joel Garner as part of the field there. Quinny, so the sports fans will love this from all genres.
And racing fans will love it even more if the popular favourite Alpha Aura can get the job done. Now, a $2 chance, Fabergino 440, Garner 480. And there's been a little bit of money for Graf at the $13 quote. Dino, just on Jungle Edge, he's $21. For you to even entertain him, would it have to be heavy? Is his recent form and the big weight good enough to suggest that if it does get into heavy, he does come into play somewhat because he's just such a duck?
Yeah, well, he's just a different horse on the wet ground. And if you thought it was going to get heavy, I think he'd need heavy. Like, he's competitive on soft, but with 60 kilos, he probably needs to slow them right down as much as possible on the wet ground. So I think, look, he's $21. If you're confident it's going to get to heavy, that's a very, very big price.
And Alpha Aura, currently a $2 favourite. Do you think that's about right, or do you think the horse might get out a little bit on race day, or conversely, could he continue to firm between now and then?
Oh, I couldn't see him shortening any more. But yeah, he's into rock bottom odds now. But you know, look, he's a winner, so that's what the punters love to gravitate to, and it's a good reason to gravitate to him.
Everyone loves a winner, certainly in the first leg of the quaddie too, just by the way. It's pretty handy to get one of those. So, Rama, you have one job for us on the Friday form, that is to take the numbers and relay them to us at the end of each race. If you don't mind doing it for the first leg, that'd be great.
Yep, 6, 3, 7, and 2.
6, 3, 7, 2. If it gets heavy, have a think about the one there, says Dino in Jungle Edge. Let's have a look at the second leg of the quaddie, race number 8. 4:30, check your local guides. The Moonga Stakes. It is Moonga, not Moonga. It's Moonga, isn't it?
Moonga, yeah.
Moonga. Moonga Stakes. $200,000. Group 3 affair again over the 1,400 metres. Set weights and penalties. And we've got 12 going around, Dino. And these colours, these pink colours with the white sashes, white crosses, are very, very prominent at the moment for Grant and Alana Williams. And they'll be hopefully a bit more prominent for them tomorrow as well, because Windstorm, his horse we've talked a lot about in the Friday form in the last month or so, his favourite at tab.com.au at around about $2.30. You're playing?
I think he's a little bit short, Daniel. He's got a very good chance. He's a must for the quaddie, but I think there's a couple here that have got very good chances, and they're at better odds, and they are number 7, the Inevitable. I think he's run in a lot of races in the last 12 months that he probably couldn't win, or he wasn't as well suited. He ran in a new market, and he's run down the straight quite a few times. But he's 2 from 2 at 1,400 metres. He'll handle soft ground. All of a sudden, he's just got into a race he can win, I think, and I think he's got a terrific hope. 10 best of days is very well weighted in this race. Run first up was good with the big weight, and he'll be fitter. He's a Group 1 winner, and I think he's well placed here. Certainly, Windstorm is a must for the quaddie players. I just think he's a bit short. I'm giving a chance to Wild Planet. He does go up 6 kilos on his run in the Epsom, but he's back to 1,400, which is probably his pet distance. We'll need a good ride off Barrier 1 to get clear at the right time. And if the rain comes, I think 50 Stars has got a little chance. He's probably a better horse. Well, he is a better horse at Flemington. There's no doubt about that. But he's a really good soft tracker, and he doesn't get it very often. And if he gets the wet ground to suit, he's a must to go in as well. So I don't think it's as clear-cut as the market, and I'm looking at a little bit of value.
Righto, Quinny. I love when Dino says that. It's not as clear-cut. You're buggered it up again there at the Tab U people with the market. That's what he's saying. What's happening in the latest movements, please, for race number 8?
Well, Windstorm's a dominant favourite at $2.30. Wild Planet a $4.80. Second elect, Best of Days, $5.50. The Inevitable has been $7.50 out to 11. I can guarantee there'll be some support at the $11 in the coming minutes after that little push there from Dino, tipping the horse on top. Dino, I know you can't put them all in, but you've left out the fourth elect, Morrissey, who's got a good record at Caulfield, having won 3 races, and a good record in what we should get tomorrow, the soft ground. What are your thoughts on Morrissey, who was 3rd behind Windstorm last start?
Yeah, I think he's not well treated under the set weights and penalties weight scale. That's one thing. And this is going to be a very fast run, or solidly run 1,400, and that's just not his go at all. When he's run at 1,400, they've gone at very pedestrian speed, and he's just dashed home. Tomorrow, you've got speed from out wide in the race, like Be Good to Your Mother, Streets of Avalon, Morvada. They put the pressure on, and I think he's under the odds.
All right, that's the assessment of the Moonga Stakes, race 8, the second leg of the quaddie. Rama, can you rehash those numbers for us, please?
Yes, 7, 10, 9, 4, and 1.
7, 10, 9, 4, and 1 for the second leg of the quaddie. All right, let's get to the feature, the $5 million Stella Artois Caulfield Cup, 2,400 metres. Handicap work, Group 1 action, it's worth winning. They're flying from all over the world to be a part of it, which is just magnificent. We've got a full field of 18 going around, of course. Actow. Now, our man Glenn McFarlane had a little sneaky piece of Actow with the Vermont Footy Club. And he was saying off air yesterday, he was being very, very pessimistic about it. Do you hope it's not there, not in yet? We haven't got the race day yet. 2 hours later, it scratched. He's put the moz on it, Dino.
Yes, it's no laughing matter with a tendon injury too. So it's very, very sad for the team. I mean, they've known since March that they were in the field, and to get to 2 days out and not take their place, I feel for them.
A disaster. So Actow comes out. We've still got a full field of 18 going around, and You mentioned Anthony Van Dyke before, the Epsom Derby winner. Very Elegant, though, is favourite at the tab at very backable odds, Dino. $5 each way value for Very Elegant tomorrow in the Caulfield Cup.
Yeah, I think you can back a few runners if you like them at these odds and certainly make a book out of the race. And we're putting, I'm making no apologies, we're putting a lot of numbers in the quaddy because it's that sort of race.
I was going to ask you how you're going to narrow it to four.
No. Four times two. we'll start. My starting point's one of good odds, and that's Delasan. I think the horse is going really well. He ran a terrific race in the Turnbull Stakes. If you watch the Turnbull Stakes, the last 50 metres, it looked like he was going to be beaten, and he actually surged and ran through the line really well. Now, he drops 4.5 kilos for that run, or 4 kilos for that run, I should say. He's run second in the South Australian Derby to Russian Camelot, the boom horse of the spring. He likes soft ground. He's got the in-form William Pike to ride. I just think he's got a really good chance at double-figure odds. But the class horses are clearly Anthony Van Dyke, who is a last start, he defeated Stradivarius, and he's beaten him twice this in the last year. So he's a seriously good horse.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Epsom Derby winner. He's come up with a wide draw. I don't know if that's a disadvantage, especially if the track's wet. Hugh Bowman can just plot the course he wants, and the horse has got tactical speed. He'll be first five or six at the worst, I would have thought. Very Elegant's a must. She's won an Ethereal Stakes at Caulfield on soft ground, Caulfield Cup Day 2 years ago. She gets the soft ground all the better. She's a great winning chance. I think Buckhurst is a very interesting runner for Joseph O'Brien. He's had a low-key build-up, but I think he's ticking over well. And he drops 8.5 kilos on that last run, and that was behind the Melbourne Cup favourite and Tiger Moth. So he can run very well. Master of Wine's a must. He's ticking over well, and I think if he gets the rain, that suits him. 10 Prince of Arran, we know he comes to Melbourne and he just improves. He ran behind Enable last start. It's another ridiculously strong form reference. He was beaten about six lengths, but we're talking world's best. And then a couple that I think are ticking over quite well. Warning, the Derby winner of last year.
Yeah, has got like a Warning.
Yeah, I wish he'd drawn a better gate because he could have used it. But, you know, just depending on the day, they might be winning out wide and he'll just sweep into the race. And I think he's a bit of a chance. And one I hadn't really considered until her last run and then she comes up with a good draw is Toffee Tongue, number 17. She's had a good build-up. Her run in the Turnbull was great. She's got 51 kilos and she's a Australasian Oaks winner. So I think she's got a little chance as well. But fantastic race. And, the form lines are certainly some of the world's best.
A lot to digest in that summary, Quinny, from Dino, which is fantastic, just by the way. And you go through the form lines and you do see the world's best horses in this Caulfield Cup, in the form lines, Quinny. So I imagine there's people coming from everywhere to back different horses because of the different form lines and their favourites coming into a big Group 1 event. I am interested in the response from the tab to Anthony Van Dyke drawing the car park in 20 or coming into whatever it is, might be 17, whatever it might come into. How's that affected Anthony Van Dyke's price, but also who else are they backing, Quinny?
It's been a very good betting race, as you would imagine. Very Elegant, currently a $5 favourite. Anthony Van Dyke, to answer your question, clearly been the best backed runner up until the barrier draw in the 48 hours leading up to that. Got as short as $4.60, reopened a $5 chance after coming up with that wide draw and has drifted out to $7. We've got Master of Wine, $8. Now, Buckhurst continues to firm. This horse was still $19 8 days ago, all the way down to $11 and in from $15 since the draw. And Della Sandino's on top selection, $21 into $15 in the last couple of days as well. Dino, just with Anthony Van Dyke, you said that the wide draw isn't a massive concern. What about the big weight? Because that might be the other little negative that punters are looking at in the form guide and scene.
It's become a very good race for top weights in recent years. Through Admire Ratke and Dunedin and class horses, it's not that big a burden. And he's got 0.5 kilo more than like Viewed when he won a Caulfield Cup. So I don't think he's too badly treated at all.
Now, we haven't put Finch in the quaddy. He was fifth in the Caulfield Cup last year and has resumed from a spell with thirds in both the Chelmsford and the Turnbull. What did you make of Finch?
I reckon he's going really well. I thought last year he'd win the Caulfield Cup, and he did have a bit of a wide run, but he just never looked really comfortable around Caulfield, and he's such a big actioned horse. Look, if he would be definitely the next in line, and he's the one that sort of grappled with putting in, but I just went back to last year's race, and I just always thought he looked very awkward around the Caulfield circuit. So Damien Lane, last year's cup-winning rider aboard, yeah, and Chris Waller. He's got a lot in his favour, but that was the one thing that I just marked against him.
Now, I've got a tweet come through from a Boof Dyson. It says, Quinny, I love the show, and I'd love to get Dino's thoughts on True Self. I thought he'd be too busy to go to Twitter this morning, though. So if you see this, can you go to Dino? So there we go. I'm now Dino's secretary.
You're my secretary.
Can you respond to Boof, who's obviously got a share there in True Self, I suspect?
Well, True Self, Queen Elizabeth winner last year, and ran really well in the Geelong Cup to Prince of Arran. So there's your form line. No guide on her last run in the Ebor, where she probably missed the start 15 or 20 lengths. So she was out of play right from the get-go. The gear changes interest me that come halfway across the world to take the earmuffs off and the tongue tie off. So that might be significant, and he's such a wily trainer. But she's come up with a good draw. I couldn't put them, as you said, can't put them all in, but yeah, I've got such great respect for Willie Mullins. I can't recall him running one here that hasn't run well, so no, it's a very interesting runner.
And final question from me. I need to ask about Avilius, because I thought they're running in the Caulfield Cup exactly 2 years too late, but what do you make of him at the $26?
Well, the wet ground will probably, if, you know, the rain comes, that would suit him. He's probably going to have to go a long way back. Look, he's got a terrific record at 2,400, but that's why these horses are here. You know, I've left Mirage Dancer out, awesome record at 2,400 metres. Dashing Willoughby's a promising horse. So there's just so many good horses in this race, and that's why I think it's a really good Caulfield Cup.
It's a cracker. It's an absolute cracker it's going to be. The Stella Artois Caulfield Cup, $5 million Group 1, 2,400 metre handicap. Tomorrow, 5:15, check your local guides. Rammer, please, what were those numbers for Dino's quaddy?
Okay, yes, 14, 1, 7, 4, 11, 10, 13, and 17.
Let's have a look at race number 10, the last leg of the quaddy, tomorrow at Caulfield on Caulfield Cup Day. The Tristark Stakes, 1,400 metres. Group 2 affair, $300,000 up for grabs. 9 going around, Dino. And the horse we've talked about a bit in the last couple of weeks, Felicia, is the favourite at tab.com.au at $3.90. Is she favourite with you?
No, she's not, Daniel.
Goodness.
First go at 1,400 and might be very testing conditions by the last race tomorrow. So I'm going with Perfect Jewel, who I think will be really strong. She was on a quick backup last start, and I'm forgiving of that run. Pretty Brazen's going really well. She had no luck last start. She's probably neutral on wet ground. I think she's better on top of the ground, but she certainly handles it well enough to be very competitive. And I think a mare called She Shall Fly is going really well for Kevin Corstens. Her run last start was good. She handles the wet. So because we've loaded up the third leg, I want to have some dividends going, hopefully, into the last leg. So I'm just going with just those three numbers.
Righto. Just the three for Dino on the last leg, Quinny. Is that what you reckon the punters might do after having to go a bit wider in the Caulfield Cup because it's so challenging?
Well, really, will I say this? Dino's left out the two best backed runners here. Felicia's been 480 into 390 to head the market at that quote. And the last start, Ramaruffian in Madame Rouge has been popular at the $5.50 quote. Dino, no Ramaruffy from last start in Ramaruge here in the quote?
Could you just say that again? I want to hear that again. I just want to hear that again, please. Rama Rouge and Madame Ruffy. Yeah.
I think I bit off more than I could bite then.
You're in the real Travis Clarkson territory here. You're in real smoke and mirrors. And daggers and...
That's fantastic.
Behind the glass.
That's it. So where are we? I've lost where we are. What's happened here?
Rama Rouge, Madame Ruffy, is... I've got a negative
Madame
on her on
Rouge,
soft ground.
Madame Rouge, a last start Rama Ruffy.
That's her. You got there.
I've got a negative on her on the soft ground, and I think she proved on that last run she's got to have everything right to run 1,400, so that's why I've just been a little bit against her. She'd be fourth pick for me, but I'm trimming up the last leg.
All right. Trimming last leg in the Quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield. Ramon, what were those last leg numbers, please?
3, 1, and 6.
All right. So we don't need my mate. He's listening. He's texting me. He goes, I'm listening. I've got all the numbers, but Juppy hasn't. So we need to get everyone those numbers again, please, Ramon. Yeah. Can you go through from the top? Thank you for the Quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield.
Yes, I can. Race 7, 6, 3, 7, and 2. Race 8, 7, 10, 9, 4, and 1. Race 9, 14, 1, 7, 4, 11, 10, 13, and 17. Then finally, race 10, 3, 1, and 6.
All right, race 10, 3, 1, and 6 tomorrow at Caulfield. What we might do is just jump to Randwick for a second and have a chat about the Tab Everest before we get the Formula Bet and the Ramaruffi, Dino and Quinny. And I know there's plenty of interest, and one of the great little marketing campaigns ever from the Tab is to send out to some really important people around the nation a silks, the Nature Strip silks, which the Tab, of course, have as their runner in the Everest tomorrow. And only the greats have got it,
you're clearly. In, Daniel.
What's that, Dino?
We know what corner you're in.
I'm on Nature Strip. I'm on Nature Strip. I think Nature Strip gets the job done tomorrow. The Tab has Nature Strip favourite, Dino, for the Everest. $15 million, if you don't mind. At $4.40, James McDonald in the saddle. Chris Waller knows what he's doing. There's a big field of 16 going around. What do you see at the Everest tomorrow?
I see a fantastic race also. If Nature Strip found his right form, he has had a bit of a checkered lead-up with the losing the rider in the trial. Then he had the mucus in his throat at his last run. But if he's on song, he's the best horse in the race for mine. He can win, but he's at a price where I'd sort of have him as a not-lose situation, and I'd be backing G-Tra, and I'd be backing Trekking, and that'd be the two I'd have as winners. And if Nature Strip one, you'd break square on the race. That'd be the three. I'd be playing Classic Legends, a good chance, and Bivouac's the improver. I'm with G-Tra.
G-Tra, number 7 in race 7 tomorrow at Randwick for Dino in the Tab Everest. Now, I'd mentioned 16 before, 16 in the field, 12 running. Quinny, what's the market saying, please?
He has been heavily backed, the Enigma Nature Strip. He's got an excellent third-up record, though. 5 starts for 4 wins. He got out to $10 after the Premier Stakes. He's all the way back down to $4.40. Classic Legend, a $5 second elect. Then we've got G-Tra, $6.50. Dino, has it surprised you how heavily backed Nature Strip has been after what he's dished up this campaign? Not just being beaten twice at the short odds, but 2 barrier trials, one where he threw the jockey and the other one he did a bit wrong as well.
Yeah, a little bit of a surprise, but it's a good starting point. They'd be the fastest horse, and he is the fastest horse. So the punters have probably gravitated to that. And the thing is that he is a bit of an enigma in that he does often get beaten at the really short prices. The punters maybe latch onto him at the wrong times. But as you said, third up is usually when he strikes. So Chris Waller knows that, and that's why he's third up into this race.
And there has been money at longer odds for Santa Ana Lane, 26 into 21, who was runner-up in the race last year.
Yeah, good point about the third up, Dino. Spot on. Spot on as always. It makes perfect sense to me. Chris Waller exactly knows what he's doing. So there you go. A little bit of opportunity for you to work around Nature Strip there if you're into it. But I'm with Nature Strip. I'm all over Nature Strip for the Tab Everest tomorrow at Randwick. Let's get back to Caulfield for the Formula Bet, if you don't mind. Dino, who are we playing for this weekend and what do you got for us?
Well, Daniel, there was nearly an incident there when Joey texted through to me, but our contestant's name is definitely Sam Good of Mooney Ponds.
Oh, and, what have you done, Joe? What have you done?
He just left a D off. And, for Sam, we're having a $40 the win on race 6, number 2, California Zimbol. $40 the win, race 7, number 6, Alpha Oro, and $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 6, number 2, into race 7, number 6, for Simon Good of Mooney Ponds.
All right, 6-2. What, 7-6, did you say? 6-2?
Yep.
7-6 tomorrow. Yep. What's that come to, Quinny?
That comes to $8 pre-multiplier, $4 into $2.
Like that. That's nice and easy to get your head around. 6-2 into 7-6 tomorrow for the Formula Bet. Good luck to the goo tomorrow at Caulfield. All right, all we need now from you, Dino, is a Ramaruffi, the world-famous Ramaruffi, just to get the juices flowing.
It's a bit, been a bit lean pickings for the Ramarafi, but I'm a little bit keener tomorrow. Race five, number five, Silhouette. Don't think she's had much luck this time in. Ready to strike third up for the Maestro. I think she's a really good chance, especially if the predicted rain comes. She handles the wet well. Race five, number five.
And we love when race five, number five, gets a bit of a look at the Ramarafi. Nice. And can't get enough of that stuff. Quinny, what's the Ramarafi paying this week, please?
It's been $10 into $8, the RR in Silhouette. So hopefully that support will continue. No doubt it will after that little push from Dino. So $8 currently for Silhouette.
$8, nice. We've got 260 action in the place. Can't go wrong with the Ramarafi in the Ethereal Stakes tomorrow. Race number five. So, Rama, what about this? We've done it again. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We've got those races covered.
Plus the Everest.
We've got your dad's horse today, Packenham.
A lot going on. It's almost too much.
That's what key forwards do. Dim is right. That Charlie at the other end, he crashes packs. He hits things. He likes it. He enjoys it. Tom Jonas will stand in the way of anything. Any of our defenders will stand in the way of anything, and as the Richmond players will. So we expect key forwards to play that way, and Dimmer does too.
That is Ken Hinckley, who has coached his socks off this year with the Port Adelaide Football Club. Finished the year on top, started the year on top. In fact, didn't actually move, and he stays through it. A magnificent year by the Power, and talking about a big game, of course, tonight against the Tigers, the Adelaide Oval.
That's great.
All these big blokes will stand in the way. They'll crash packs, Rammer.
No, but how good is that? Okay, that's fine, Dimmer. You want to throw Tom Lynch up about crashing patch? I'll raise you with Charlie Dixon crashing into a couple of your defenders.
Yeah, magnificent.
Let's see how we go tonight.
Magnificent.
I love it.
I'm all for that. And I reckon Boomer Harvey will be all for that. The AFL Games record holder is a big part of the team on a Friday morning. We call it the Friday Footy Preview, and preliminary final weekend is the best of the year to do it. Boomer, good morning to you.
Good morning, boys. And you're spot on, Half. I think prelim final for the fans was probably the best time of year because they could go to the MCG. It wasn't so corporate, which the grand final completely is. So everybody's looking forward to prelim, but a little bit different this year because there's no footy in Melbourne. So every week's good week in AFL finals for me, and I love those talks. Don't you love the talk, Dimmer and Kenny Hinckley saying about their big forwards? That's football. That's going to happen. I don't think there's any scare tactics. Port players know that they're going to get hurt at some stage, and Richmond players know that's going to be very, very hard for them as well. So it's going to be a great weekend of football.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. It's going to be great. You are one of the all-time great preliminary final specialists. When it gets to this weekend, do you start to think about the lead tutor floater over Mick Martin? Is that when you start to think about that?
what was I thinking
Did
about?
Did you play in that game? What year was that?
Oh, mate, I was about 12 years old, Daniel. I'm not that old. Come on, you're better than
what
that.
What year was that?
But you know what?
I was 94.
I was actually there with my brother, and we're sitting in the stand praying to God that North Melbourne lost that day because I was a Geelong supporter growing up. Ablett only had a 2 or 3 possessions, I reckon, and then Lee Tudor got it from the boundary. Little wobbler straight into to G. Ablett, and the Cats won, and me and my brother were very, very happy boys that day.
You know what goes unnoticed in that passage of play? One of my old teammates and one of the funniest men I've met, Johnny Barnes, he drops an absolute sitter before that. No pressure on him. No, and that's twice. So he did that in that game, obviously. And then in the grand final of 2000, obviously there's, you know, the big hoo-ha who's the first goal kicker. Barnesy again just dropped an absolute soda.
You were into Darcy Cameron last week about dropping a soda. You got to do that stuff. You're a professional footballer. You got to do that stuff. I hope you gave him some feedback.
Absolutely. I said you're hopeless, Barnesy. What's wrong with you?
Right, you can say that after the game when you win, can't you? He's had a lot of bit of a tap on the head and say, don't worry about it. But when you win, gee, you can go there and go there hard.
All right, Friday night, tonight, obviously Richmond versus Port Adelaide. When you look at this game, guys, how much reference do you put in to when they last met? Any, a little bit, or none, because Richmond's team was so different?
Take out the team for a second. I always go back and have a look at the history of these two teams. And you can't go too deep because Port's team's change as well over you know the last couple of years. But I do go back to the last time they met. But you're right, Whitey. Probably the hardest one is the Richmond team because they had so many injuries and things have changed. So I do look at it, but I don't think you can put as much emphasis on it as you normally would for me.
What about you, Rama?
Yeah, look, I put a little bit on it because I think, okay, yeah, personnel for both teams. Let's put that to one side. But it's the way Richmond, it's the way Port Adelaide were able to open Richmond up in that game, and that was through run and dash, where Richmond don't like when teams come at them fast, and Port Adelaide continually came at them fast that day. You know, it was like the margin was a lot more than the 21 points. It was 28 scoring shots to 17. So, yeah, that margin, Port Adelaide kicked 13 goals at 15 that afternoon. Yeah. And, like, it easily, I thought the margin could have easily been 7 or 8 goals. Port Adelaide missed 5 sitters, that just absolute sitters. That just, you know, Charlie Dixon in that game alone, he was off target, kicked 2 goals, 4. So that's the one area I think. Personnel all back in tonight. Yep, fantastic. But the one area I think that would be concerning Dimmer was how Port Adelaide opened them up. Firstly, around the contest, to win the ball around the contest, but then the speed away from that contest or the speed away from when they turned the ball over.
And just to elaborate on Rammer's point there, 80 more disposals. The inside 50s, Whitey, were 55 to 24 that game. Unbelievable, yeah. huge. It's 31 more inside 50s. And so the way that Rama just explained that was absolutely perfect. And the good players played well, Rama. You just mentioned Charlie Dixon kicking 2 goals, 4. Boak had 31, Wines 28, Gray had 22 and 3 goals. They're good players for Port, played really, really, really well that day.
So the issue with tonight's game for the Tigers, I feel, is they're going to want to slow Port Adelaide down. But Richmond traditionally aren't a great stoppage team. So they're not going to go, they're not going to have or want to go from one stoppage to the next. They're going to want to keep the ball in movement, but in slow movement, if you sort of understand what I mean. If Richmond try to play a stoppage game, Port Adelaide will beat them because they've got Wines, they've got Boak, they've got Pau Pepper, Robbie Gray will come up at times. So they're probably a lot more dangerous around that contest. So what the Tigers will try to do is make Port Adelaide play a kick-mark game tonight. Kick the ball, mark it, stop, slow down. Kick the ball again, sideways, slow down. Once Port Adelaide start to bring the ball back through the middle of the ground and start to attack Richmond's defenders that way, that's when it'll be concerning for the Tigers. What the Tigers want to do is they want to squeeze the ground. They love to squeeze it to one side of the ground. Get Dixon up the ground. So outside of his forward 50, to try to be taking marks around half forward, around the wing. If you've got those mids, if you've got, you know, Rosie and Butters and those guys and Dersmer flying through the middle of the ground, Richmond's defenders will be all at sea because they took a lot of marks in that game, the Powers, because it wasn't just Dixon. There was Pete Laddams in that game. I think Westhoff even played in that game. So, and one of it was Georgiades also that played in that game that really concerned the Tigers. So, I don't think it's going to be turned into a stoppage game necessarily, Whitey. But Richmond will want to slow it down. They want to have a temp. They want to play a real tempo game tonight.
Yeah, well, 12 marks inside 50-5 that game in round 13, wherever it was, and they smacked them around the ball. As you rightly said, they wouldn't mind a stoppage game, Port Adelaide, because that's their bread and butter. They were 40-22 last time around, 20-5 out of the middle, which won't happen, I don't think, because the personnel that Richmond will have in there tonight, which is slightly different. But that's a game that they can really be confident in. That contest game is their bread and butter, and they can get field territory on that, play the territory game on the back of that. One thing they do need to be wary of is focusing too much on Tom Lynch, I reckon. Jack Rewalt's averaged 3 goals a game. 15 of his 17 games against the Power kicked 3 goals. So if they put all the energy into focusing on Tom Lynch as that forward half of the Tigers with that spurt of ball, Jack's going to get off the chain. And we know that Jack's not immune to big moments and enjoying those moments too. And this is a pretty big one for his football club tonight. So they'll need to be mindful of that. You probably think that McKenzie goes to Lynch again, does he? And then Cleary goes to Jack? And Jonas rolls off as the third? Is that what happens?
This is a very interesting point and could be the key to the game for me, because McKenzie's well undersized and he's done a good job on some big key forwards. We know that. Likes getting the ball in his hand. But, yeah, what do they do with Jonas? What do they do with Cleary? Does McKenzie be that third and come off and try to be the Grimes type where he can come off his man and do that? I don't know how it's going to work, and I think it's going to be really interesting and a key to the outcome of this game for me.
My gut feel is, because McKenzie played on Hawkins in the qualifying final, he may go to Lynch. Rewald will be too agile for McKenzie. So I don't necessarily think the matchup is there, but my gut feel is Jonas will have to go to Rewald and just play a negating game and have Cleary as your floater half. So It's always been the one sort of area of concern for Port Adelaide, but they've seemed to just be able to get that right with those matchups. Now, did the McKenzie and Hawkins matchup work in the first week of the finals? Well, they won the game, but Hawkins kicked five behinds and he had six shots at goal. So, you know, if he kicks four goals, people are going to say, well, that didn't work. We can't roll with that again. So that's going to be probably the fascinating. I think your stat about Rewald's a really good one. He does play really well against Port Adelaide. He hasn't been mentioned all this week because he had a quiet game last week. So they're going to need, you know, big numbers out of him. The other part to this is when Dusty goes forward, well, who is it? Because you have to get that matchup right when Martin goes forward. Now it's not going to be Houston. It's probably not going to be Byrne Jones. I wouldn't have thought it's going to be Hamish Hartlett. So it's one of those other three.
Yeah, why
couldn't it be Houston? Rammer?
Because they want his run. Monster. Yeah, Dusty will destroy him in a one-on-one contest deep inside forward 50. Like, Martin loves that. He loves when it's a smaller opponent. You need, like, the only one that I've really seen successful on Martin when he goes as a deep forward has been Stratton. It's because Stratton always played an awkward sort of style of game. He got off, you know, Martin, he used his legs at times to spoil the ball. And, you know, it was just an awkward matchup for Martin. But I think we'll see Martin a lot playing deep forward tonight.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. Burton might have a role in all of that too.
Yeah.
But again,
you want the run
either.
Half there.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You want
true.
That run from him.
It's a fascinating contest. Port Adelaide haven't lost a game this year when they've won the inside 50 count. Good little stat for you. You can have it on your target.
During the week on the news, I've seen Michael Voss. He was talking about the game, obviously, and he said the Port like to get their ball in the forward half and lock it in.
Yep.
And that comes back to that stoppage game, Rammer, that they will play stoppage after stoppage from, you know, 80 metres out, because they do score from forward stoppages as well. You mentioned Gray on the move all the time. Boat gets his hand on the football. If they can do that and lock it in, because Richmond, again, we just keep coming back to it, but every single time they're not going to change. We know how they play. They play that surge mentality football. They will get it, and that's why they don't like stoppages, because they knock it on, et cetera, and get the ball forward their way. But if Port can do that, get the ball and lock it in, that's going to be another key factor to this game.
Well, Boomer, you talked before about the inside 50 differential the last time they played. Richmond didn't score in the last quarter when they last met. Now, again, it is different because the players that didn't play for Richmond that day, but it's similar as well in that it's the same ground, and Port Adelaide had a style that did worry Richmond on that particular occasion. And the ruck situation still is a factor, I think, in this match, because Port Adelaide have got two ruckmen that have played very well all year, and that's where Richmond have been a little bit light. Nankervis has missed a bit of footy this year. Perhaps he's not as good as he was. Solder, all that sort of thing. Interesting. Interesting.
All right. Let's have a look at who you think might win this one. We've got a special guest on the line too, just has popped up, which is good business. Boomer, first up, you're our Friday specialist. Who wins?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Port Adelaide. I think if they play to their potential and their good players play well again, which is in a prelim final, they should be standing up. The fact that it's on the same ground as Whitey mentioned, the inside 50s from last time, I think Port get the win tonight.
Rama, who wins?
I think the Tigers will be smart enough to slow this game down completely tonight. So it might be a little bit of a bore fest for us as fans, but it's going to be tight. So I'm going to go the Tigers just. I'm talking 2 points. I think it's going to be a really tight contest.
Whitey, who wins?
Oh, look, it could easily go either way. I'm going with Port Adelaide. I just think they have been the best team all year, and they did beat Richmond, albeit Richmond under strength. I'm going with the home team, but I hate going against Richmond in a final.
I'm going with the Power. I think they're almost good things. Almost good things, the Power.
Almost.
Yep. Well, it's close you can get the prelim. We're pretty tight because there's not too many prelims against Richmond you're going to be confident in, but I think if you can be, this is the time to be for Port Adelaide and they can win it. There you go.
What's ins and outs, right. Daniel? Did you do the ins and outs for the game?
No ins and outs. Didn't need
no
to.
Change.
No change. And I think we'll probably get no
That's
change
exactly
for the other
point.
Game too.
Exactly my point, that? Daniel.
That's a good point. Good pick up.
We're not, Huff, we're not going to know until after this game's played tonight, but Richmond's form
is.
Coming in, we're still... Yeah, Richmond's form, I mean, they lost to Brisbane and, yeah, they beat St Kilda, but I still don't think they're quite at their best.
New case numbers tonight in today in coronavirus. Daniel Harper Carlton days. Two. That's a good result for the punters at home.
So we can
two.
Go to the pub on Sunday? Go to the pub on Sunday?
Well, I'm coming to your place. Mark Stevens is going to be there too. He can't get enough. The chief AFL reporter with Channel 7, of course, he's our main man here on RSN 927 as well. And he's been sniffing around this Adam Treloar story, and I want to find out more. Steve-O, good morning.
Yeah, morning, guys. It's an interesting one. I've been on this all week. Copped a little bit of criticism for it. Of course, Treloar was on 360. Spoke well. Said, I'm contracted. I love Collingwood. But what he wasn't asked is, can you guarantee you will be at Collingwood next year? Now, I believe he won't be at Collingwood. I think it's only an outside chance. In fact, he'll stay at Collingwood. I think he's happy enough to stay at Collingwood. But Collingwood, I think, see him as perhaps tradable, and I think he'll be a big story of the trade week that he is preparing perhaps to go to another club. It won't necessarily be Gold Coast, as is being suggested, of course, with the netball link. Of course, Gold Coast have that early pick. But if it gets to the stage where he will be on the trade table, it's up to him to decide where to go. He will be very strong on where he wants to go. Obviously, he's in contract, but my mail is that only an outside chance that Adam Treloar will be at Collingwood next year. And it was an interesting few days in the hub just after the last game where, you know, the recent interviews and whatever, and Collingwood are getting adventurous in what they're doing. And I think they're prepared to trade Adam Treloar. They haven't, of course, said that publicly, but I think that's the twist in the story.
Wow. So isn't he contracted till 2025 or something?
Yeah, it is a long one. It is a long one. So, of course, Collingwood are looking to get players in. And, yeah, I'm told that he's now preparing at least for a busy trade period and perhaps looking at some options. So certainly wouldn't rule out Adam Treloar leaving. And if you've listened to that interview, he didn't actually say he's definitely staying. He's just saying, look, I'm contracted. I'm contracted. He was saying all the right things. Of course, spoke very well. And he'd be a great pickup for somebody. So I think there's a lot to play out with Adam Treloar and the Magpies.
Tomorrow night at the Gabatoir, the Brisbane Lions hosting the Cats in the preliminary final. It looks as though we'll have no change in that game either, which would be fantastic on preliminary final weekend. Teams fully firing, fit and fully in full strength and playing for a spot in the grand final. And the Brisbane Lions have had a week off, Boomer, and they got a chance to watch the Cats absolutely demolish the Magpies from the very first moment of that clash last week. How do they stop this machine, or are the Cats more worried about the Lions tomorrow night?
Yeah, I don't know who's worried about who any more than the other one is, because I think this is a riveting game. You know what? I'll be completely honest with you. I haven't rated Geelong as probably as highly as I should be, but their game style I really like. I think that's the way football should get played. Maintain possession through the back half, and when you get it forward of centre, have a big target to kick to and kick in there. I still maintain what I say about Geelong. Their smalls are not dominating like I thought they would have. They're not hitting the scoreboard, so that's their massive advantage. If everything clicks together, they could kick a massive score. We already know that they're one of the highest scoring teams, if not the highest maybe, in the competition. When they get that ball forward to centre, hit Hawkins, ball hits a deck, their smalls just need to do a little bit more. Last time they played against Brisbane, they really maintained possession. I think they had 30-plus marks and 60-odd more uncontested possessions. So if they get their game style, they're going to be hard to beat. But Brisbane, Brisbane, I'm really liking what they did against Richmond a couple of weeks ago. I like their style where they did chip the ball around, and that's their style to beat Richmond. But as soon as you can get the opportunity to break a line and get the ball forward, they did that as well. So they both play a similar type of game, and I reckon that could happen again on Saturday night. So this is riveting for me. I got no idea who's going to win. I just think the better team on that night, there's no advantage for either team. And their midfield's certainly a battle. Brisbane are batting really deep through there now, and they're not huge household names other than the Neil. I think McCluggage is playing a great role out in the wing, and Lyons in the guts as well. So if they can get in the middle and get an advantage through there with Steph Martin, he's playing, isn't he? Did Martin get back in? He's playing.
Big Steph's there, I think. Yeah.
Big Steph's there. If they can get an advantage through him, because that's one area that Geelong really lack with their ruckman, it could be a stoppage game, and whoever win the clearances get the ball forward, and more inside 50s probably equals more score.
So getting the ball forward, Rammer, is going to be the key in how they do it from a Brisbane perspective, because Geelong defend so well. They come across and support each other so well. So is it almost a factor of chaos ball inside your forward 50 to try and unsettle the Geelong defenders?
Well, here's the thing with Geelong's defenders. So they've got Harry Taylor, they've got Collar Jasny, they've got Jack Henry, and they've got Blitzarves, who are all very tall. They're very, very tall. Then you throw Tom Stewart in there, who's another reasonably big sort of defender. He doesn't play that way. Then Buse and O'Connor. So they're not... And I said this last week, I would have loved to have seen more run from Geelong's defensive six, but they didn't need it last week because they were just so dominant from the opening bounce. But this is the interesting one for tonight with Brisbane. Your chaos ball that you mentioned, because you're not going to necessarily get the big games out of Hipwood and McStay as big key forwards, I think you're right, Half. I think that's a great call. Like, using that chaos ball then to involve Charlie Cameron more at ground level, because if the ball's in the air going to Charlie Cameron, he's going to get monstered. Because Stewart's going to come across, Collar Jasny's going to come across, Henry's going to come across. You know, they're going to be all third men in those contests because Hipwood and McStay like to play higher up the ground. Like, if you look where Hipwood kicks a lot of his goals, Whitey, they're from outside forward 50. So speed on the game for Brisbane is really, really important. But I think at the same time, for Geelong, that speed on the game is important because of Harris Andrews, because he's so good at what he does, Whitey.
There's a little key to here. Geelong play a really proactive... Sorry, Whitey, to jump in.
Jump in.
It is hard doing it like this. But Geelong play such a proactive defence. So the key for me is to shift the defence. Now, what I mean by shifting the defence, you've got to play the angles. You can't just play up one wing and kick the ball inside 50 down that side of the ground. You've got to be able to shift the angles, because Geelong will play, we know that Stewart will play 5, 6, 7 metres in front to the right-hand side of his opponent or to the left. So when you change the angles and shift the defence, you're making him run an extra 6 or 7 metres every single time. So for me, it's change the angles for Brisbane when they go inside 50.
Nice work, Boomer. Who wins?
No question about Whitey, for me, mate.
You just select. Who wins, Boomer?
Sorry, Whitey. Brisbane for me.
Brisbane, Rammer?
Geelong.
Whitey?
I don't really know. I'm going Brisbane. I'm going Brisbane at home. I think their form's been excellent, so, yeah.
I'm on the Lions as well.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.